Good evening, everybody, and welcome. Welcome to our National Day of Service event at Epworth United Methodist Church here in the heart of Toledo, Ohio. We are glad to have you joining us from here in Ohio and literally all across the country. We were asked to do this in conjunction with Martin Luther King Jr. Day, which is, of course, today, and also in conjunction with the inaugural festivities for President Biden and Vice President Harris. Although this is not a political event or a partisan event at all, it's a public service event. We appreciate, however, being boosted at the inaugural site because we have people who have logged on from all across the country. Literally, even moments ago, we kept getting registrations. So we realize that people are tuning in from across our great land, and that's very, very valuable. We wanted to begin this evening, as most of these events will begin, with a moment of silence for those who have lost their lives and for the loved ones who have experienced people close to them who have lost their lives because of this COVID plight that has faced our country for the past year. A moment of silence, please. Thank you very much. All right, well, I have the privilege of introducing distinguished medical leaders in our community, both from Lucas and Wood counties, well-known physicians that I'm very honored to have here tonight. And so may I begin on my left. Dr. Stephen Baisley, who is a family physician and also has had a great role in leadership in the medical community throughout the years here in Toledo. Dr. Baisley, thank you and welcome. Dr. Tim Kasnick, who is a hematologist and medical oncologist at the Toledo Clinic Cancer Centers. Dr. Kasnick, welcome. Thank you. Dr. Kathy Kerrigan, who is a partner at the Perrysburg Family Physicians. Welcome, Dr. Kerrigan. Thank you. And Dr. Prak Niak, who is the owner of the drugstore at Perrysburg, an independent community pharmacy. Welcome, Dr. Niak. Thank you so much. How about a hand? All of those who are here, let's welcome them. I wanted to begin tonight with a question for all of you, please, if you would take a moment, each of the panelists, to answer. I noticed in the Toledo Blade today there was a feature story that said Ohio had dropped 21% in terms of new COVID cases today. And I think that's a fantastic thing, a great accomplishment, and I'm wondering if you all might take a moment to comment on that. Dr. Baisley?
Well, I'd like to think the future will continue along those lines. It is, unfortunately, a very contagious virus. And so, as we all know, the media can do up and down in terms of reporting things. So that's wonderful news. I know the vaccine hasn't done that yet.
Okay.
The vaccine hasn't done that yet. But indeed, the awareness of this nasty disease does appear to be growing every day. So hopefully that bodes well for the future.
Thank you. Dr. Kasnick.
Yeah, cautious optimism. We certainly are seeing less hospital admissions. But at the same time, we know that there are some variants coming out of the virus. So just reminds us we have to all be hypervigilant, wearing masks and social distancing until we're out of this.
Thank you. Dr. Kerrigan.
I would agree that we have to continue to be hypervigilant about our personal protection and our protection of other people as well. And we really need to make sure that we don't rest on our laurels, so to speak, and not get tested. So when you have symptoms, you should still do what your doctor says and get tested if you can or if you feel like you need to.
Dr. Niak.
I agree with the panel. I think it's definitely positive trends, and that's something that we have had a lot recently with positive trends with COVID-19. So I think it's important to be aware. And remember, this is the long haul, and these changes that we have to do have to be part of our daily routine. You know, social distancing, wearing a mask, and being aware for under the weather to be socially responsible. So I think it's positive, but we can't let our guard down. So.
Thank you all very much. For all of the friends who are tuning in online, I wanted to mention that this is being broadcast at upworth.com/live, but also on Facebook and YouTube. If you would like to comment or ask a question, we're going to only be able to respond to those who are at our site. So if you're watching at those other platforms, that's great. But hop on over, please, to upworth.com/live. You can type in your questions. One of our staff members will be asking that for you a little bit later on in this evening. So I wanted to make sure that you have the ability to ask whatever question that be on your mind. I guess we can just jump right into the real kind of issue that people are facing. And that is, what does it feel like to get the shot, to get the injection? And I know all of our panelists have received that injection. I was speaking to Dr. Kerrigan when she arrived. She, I think, maybe received it maybe the most recently, just a couple of days ago. So could you tell us your experience of the receiving the injection, but also the side effect?
Well, I received my injection on Friday afternoon, and I had a little local tenderness Friday night in my arm, which I expected. But I have a history of responding pretty aggressively to vaccines. Like, my immune system really loves vaccines and wants to respond, which I consider a benefit because it actually means my immune system is getting revved up every time I get a vaccine. But so I felt a little off on Saturday morning, but did pretty good, and a little achy, but I felt kind of hyper. I had a feeling of like a lot of energy, which surprised me because everybody said, oh, you're probably going to feel fatigued. And I really didn't at all. It was kind of the opposite. And then started to decline a little on Saturday night. And Saturday in the middle of the night, I had a fever and aches and pains and didn't sleep very well. And then kind of felt off on Sunday as well, but was able to go about my routine for the most part. Just kind of decided to lay low and, took a over-the-counter Aleve and was fine. Then last evening in the middle of the night, my fever broke. And I think my fever was about 101. And, I really consider that to be kind of a benefit because I know that my immune system really vigorously responded to the inoculation. So that's what vaccines do. They fire up your immune system so that when you are re-challenged with that virus in the future, your body just instantly recognizes it and fights it off. And so I look at a positive reaction to a flu shot, to any shot really, as a sign that, hey, it's working. So plus I had antibodies to COVID going in. So I think that might have made my immune system kind of like a little primed to really react to the vaccine. But I certainly would do the vaccine again. It was not any situation where I would be hesitant to do the second one. I'm going to be prepared and be cognizant that I could have a response similar to this response after the next vaccine. But, in dealing with the general public and working with sick people on a daily basis, it's our responsibility to do all we can to protect ourselves and our patients.
Well, thank you very much. That's true. Several of our church members have told me that they've gone to other states to get the injection because they could get it quicker there, for example, in Florida and other places than here, which was kind of interesting to me. But so anybody else, any other panelists have a reflection about the injection?
Well, I need to work on my immune system because...
You were fine?
I think what Dr. Kerrigan was saying is sort of supported, that usually if you don't have antibodies, you'll have a bigger reaction to the second dose. And so this was my first dose. I didn't have antibodies, and I had really no side effects whatsoever.
That's wonderful, Dr. Kasnick. That's great. Anybody else? Dr. Baisley.
This is not like your standard flu vaccine. You are not being injected with any of the virus itself. You're using this thing called messenger RNA, which is way more complex than I want to deal with. Whether my partners want to, I doubt it. But bottom line is, so it's different in that regard. In our group of six family physicians in Waterville, Ohio, the two senior members of the group, of which I'm one, the over 65 group, we had no significant reaction. The four kids in our group all had, oh, my arm was sore, oh, I had a fever, oh, whatever. And yes, my immune response is probably dormant like Tim's, and that's okay. But bottom line is, it's still effective. Yes, it's a very effective vaccine, and I'm getting shot number two in a couple days. And yes, you usually do get a little more reaction with shot number two. We anticipate that, but basically much, much worth it.
I'm glad you mentioned that it's not the actual virus, because with the flu vaccine, as you mentioned, it's the virus. So that, I think, maybe eased people's minds.
Right.
Thank you. Dr. Nayak, how about you?
So I got the vaccine as well, and I was only sore for a day and a half. So I don't know if I fit into the young or the old category, but... The biggest thing that you need to realize is that everyone's going to have a different reaction. And so you compare yourself with family, friends, your spouse. Don't be like, well, it didn't hurt me, and why are you still lying in bed? Because honestly, we all react differently. And again, our second dose, we're going to react a little stronger than we did for the first dose. And Dr. Kerrigan can give a perfect example. And standard, typical reaction. The biggest thing is with this this process, this technology is brand new. It's been used a lot in research. And the first dose is almost giving your cells a blueprint saying, hey, this is what you need to know to make antibodies and to react and to protect yourself. So almost like teaching your cells. And the second dose, it basically says, okay, let's test and see how you're doing. So because Dr. Kerrigan has had some previous exposure to it, her body was already had kind of like a memory, and it had a prime, it was primed to basically respond to the vaccine. And versus our cells that have didn't have much of a reaction, our second dose we may have some reactions similar to Dr. Kerrigan's, but it's all considered normal. So don't and it may last for days. And again, like I said earlier, it's going to be a different reaction than a flu shot. A lot of the reports are stating it's a similar reaction to those of us have got the Shingrix vaccine, the newer shingles vaccine that has the two doses that are 4 to 6 months apart. If you had the type of reaction you have for that, it's going to be very similar to what you'll probably get with the COVID vaccine. So if you're kind of what the biggest question we get in the pharmacy, as I'm sure as well as practitioners, is when I get it and what's going to happen. And that's kind of what we try to give people some guidance. But it is exciting times, and technology is something to be excited about because this is how we're going to be able to attack challenges that we have in healthcare in the future. So,
thank you very much.
Please. I just want to stress too that you, if you've had COVID, you should still get the vaccine. So, and that doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have a really vigorous response to the vaccine because, like Prax said, everyone is different. But we still, really, the message is clear that you need to get the vaccine if you have had COVID already.
That leads to my next question, and then I'm going to take it to our director of mission here, Jenny Vansel, and she has some questions from the audience. But that leads into my next question, which is, we have had folks who have contacted us and said, hey, my daughter, my son, family member got COVID. They got the injection, and they got a really, really bad reaction because of it. Now, I know you said a lot of people don't, but what happens when they do, and I guess that shouldn't keep them from getting the shot? What would you think, Dr. Kesnick?
Yeah, I look at the any side effect of a vaccine is much less worrisome than getting the virus itself.
Okay.
And so even if you have flu-like symptoms for a few days, that's much, much better than the alternative.
And if someone has had COVID and they get the vaccine and they have a bad reaction, is that something to be really concerned about, or it's going to go away eventually? It's not a big deal?
It's not. It's just temporary symptoms that will come and go.
Okay.
That's assuming they don't have a really bad reaction, like anaphylaxis or something like that. Like their tongue swells up and they can't breathe.
In which case, they go immediately to the emergency room. And
Yeah. And they would have to do some serious thinking with their physicians before they got the second vaccine. Okay.
That's a good point. Dr. Baisley, what would you say? Should they not get the second vaccine if there was a reaction because they had COVID to the first shot?
If the recommendations appear to be, and again, this is a new virus, that if someone has had COVID, definitely a positive test, they have reasonable immunity for the first 90 days. So probably the recommendation is you don't need to start the COVID vaccine probably the first 90 days. Seriously, contact your physician to get more insight on that process, but go that. Given that fact, if they have a reaction to the first one, so be it. We talked about earlier, there's no harm. In other words, when we see kids in the office and give them immunization, we will tell mom and dad, give them Tylenol, either before they come in, after they come in, ibuprofen, something along that line. Likewise, we adults can do the same thing. There's no harm in doing that. Tim and my immunity, even though we didn't react first time, hopefully won't second time, will be just as good as Dr. Kerrigan's because the antibodies will be there, so I'm not worried about that. So if you don't get a fever, don't worry about that. It's still working. But bottom line is, yes, definitely get it. If you have a real concern or you have major allergic issues, this anaphylaxis scenario, contact a family physician or your internist, whoever, try to get an answer that way. But in general, you want to get shot number two because I have had patients die of COVID-19 who weren't that sick to begin with.
Wow.
Who weren't that old. So therefore, this is a very bad disease. You want to prevent it. A couple days of achiness and fever is fine, but the other one puts you in a hospital. Puts you in a hospital this day and age, you can't see your family because of all the restrictions. So far and away, you want to prevent this. This is medicine at its best, preventing things. And so far and away, yes, you want to get that second one. But yes,
be a wuss like a guy, take some Tylenol, take some Advil or a leave beforehand or whatever, that's fine. But you want to get that in, yes.
Thank you for that really good information. Sure.
Can I just add to that, too, that it is safe to get the vaccine after you've had the virus as soon as your symptoms clear. I mean, it's probably safe even if you have symptoms, but they would really discourage you from having the vaccine while you were having symptoms. But the 90-day rule, I think, was initially proposed by the CDC to help with the supply of vaccines, to disseminate them to people who really need them. But it is safe to get the vaccine within that 90-day window.
Okay, thank you. Before I go to the audience, I want to say a big thank you to a couple of organizations that co-sponsored and supported this event tonight. And that, of course, is the United Way of Greater Toledo. Thank you for your support. And the Lucas County Department of Health, we thank you for your support. We have agreed at Epworth United Methodist Church to be an injection site when the injections are available to the general public. We're centrally located here in Toledo, and we have a large facility. And so we're happy to be a part of helping our neighbors get these injections. And I understand the injections are free of charge, and so there's really no barrier there for folks as well. Jenny, do you have a question from the audience?
Yes, I'm first going to ask all of the participants to make sure you're speaking into the mic, because there are some people that aren't able to hear as well, and make sure you're talking to the mic versus responding to Pastor Steve as far as the questions. The first question, and I've got
the
scroll.
It doesn't help that we're wearing masks, but we're doing it on purpose, though. Thank you.
Yes, and we're all wearing masks. Right. And the questions are coming in, so good. There are quite a few people that have questions. Yeah. The first question is, once vaccinated, will we still need to have a COVID test afterwards if we come in contact with someone? Or is there a reason for us to continue to have the testing to find out whether we're positive or negative?
Yes, so I'll take this one here. So even once we're vaccinated, and you think about 7 to 10 days after your second dose where you have producing antibodies to protect, it's, again, optimally the vaccine is 95% effective at controlling transmission, but there's that 5% so that I could be a carrier and actually have the virus and pass it on to other individuals. One of the challenges with this rollout, this is the first time this has been done since 1918, is to try to vaccinate a humongous population all in a short period of time. So not everyone's going to be vaccinated at the same amount of time. So right now, children under the ages of 16 cannot be vaccinated. The data won't be out probably until next year. So in the past, we were always worried that kids are bringing home germs and giving them to the parents. The situation here, there's one of the challenges is that the parents who may be vaccinated and protected may help be part of that 5%, like harbors the virus and can potentially pass it on to children, which as of now, and knock on wood, they're doing great. But as the panel discussed, some of the variants coming out, some of the virus has changed a little bit and being a little bit tricky. So we don't know how that's going to affect us in the future, which is why we're trying to get some protection and why the masks, hand washing, and social distancing, regardless of vaccine type and when you get it, is very, very important because it's not 100%.
Thank you. The next question is, somebody wrote in, and I'm not sure if our panelists will be able to answer this. If your doctors and specialists are in Lucas County, but you don't live in Lucas County, you live in one of the outlying counties, are you able to come to Lucas County for a vaccine?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. Sounds like a government. So
my business is in Wood County, but we take care of patients in Lucas as well as Wood and into Michigan and so forth. But we contacted both. We registered with I'm part of 1A, so we registered with Lucas County and Wood County.
Sure.
And both health departments said they'll let us know whomever is ready for a rollout. So I actually got my first dose with Lucas County, and I'll probably get my second dose as well with them. And I think it comes down to if you see patients in multiple areas, then they want you to be protected because you're not in, you know, one area only. So typically when you register with the health department, they'll let you know if you qualify or not. So
Thank you. Another question that I think is on a lot of people's minds. If there's time for any of you to address the misconceptions as the the mRNA in the vaccine will change one's DNA.
What the components of the vaccine change our DNA? Anybody have a response to that? Dr. Baisley?
I'm farther from medical school than some of these people. It's a messenger. It's sending a message. It's not going to change your DNA, as far as I know, unless somebody...
Dr. Kasnick?
Absolutely agree.
Okay.
Like I said earlier, it's basically giving the blueprint to your cells. So you basically, the mRNA, here's a message, and it tells it to your cells and immune system, and actually say, we want to produce this, you're going to produce this protein for your immune system to almost take, you know, take note of it and say, okay, now let's figure out how to make antibodies against that. So the mRNA doesn't actually interact with your DNA. It is like Dr. Baisley said, is a message. And it's, like I said, a blueprint's the best way, example I can give, so.
You know, to just add on to that, there's going to be several mechanisms of action for the different vaccines. In other words, they're going to be effective but in different ways. But I think the common thing is that they're going to target one part of the virus, but never an active part of the virus. And so there's never going to be any risk associated with getting the virus with any of the vaccines that are on the market.
That's very good. Did you have something you wanted to share?
Well, so I think this is a very interesting question and gets to the heart of a lot of people's concerns. And so I think it's important to understand a little bit about this, the basic mechanics of the vaccine. And so I'm talking about the two mRNA vaccines. There are little pieces of the messenger RNA, which is like a little ticker tape of coding to allow for the viral protein to be made by your own cell's machinery. So the companies, Pfizer and Moderna, have enclosed those little fragments of messenger RNA in like a little fat bubble. They call it a phosphodiester, help me here, lipid bilayer. It's a lipid bilayer. It sort of resembles your cell's cell wall. And so when you're injected, your cells can kind of absorb the vaccine. And when they do that, they have little bubbles that they can form around the particles that are injected. Those particles are brought into the cell's cytoplasm, which is like the material outside the nucleus of the cell. It's sort of like the cell juice. And so once that little bubble is brought into the cell, the messenger RNA is released into the cytoplasm of the cell that takes it up. And it's really kind of cool because that little blueprint is then, or that little ticker tape is unlocked, and you have these little protein machines inside your cytoplasm called ribosomes, and they attach to that little ticker tape and start making the protein that codes for, which is the virus protein that the cell will then excrete, and your body will, or it'll reattach it to its cell surface, so your body's like, whoa, where did this come from? Immune response starts. The beauty of this is that messenger RNA is very fragile, so it doesn't last very long. It stays inside your cell for just a little bit of time, makes a little bit of protein, then it just sort of falls apart. So it doesn't get incorporated into the DNA. It does not go into the nucleus of the cell. That's where the DNA lives. So really, it's kind of beautiful in that it's sort of like a temporary little virus-making switch that naturally degrades and gets turned off. So that really, when I learned that and when I reviewed that science, I thought, okay, yeah, that makes sense now to me, that this is a safe thing. And you know, I got the Moderna vaccine. I think that the mRNA technology is very elegant because it kind of uses all the strengths and weaknesses of our own physiology. So I think that may help people to understand a little bit about, because you hear these terms about, oh, it's this or it's that, but if you can kind of envision the process, I think it helps you to understand it better and to realize that it's not necessarily something that's going to persist inside of you in the sense that mRNA is going to live inside your cells. It's not.
Thank you for that. What about, I wanted to follow up on a question earlier about ages. About, did you say under 16 or under 11? What was it?
So the Moderna vaccine is not. Under, so the ages of 1 to like 18 have not been tested. So the approval for is 16 and over for Pfizer and 18 and over for Moderna. Okay. So which means that
the pediatric population still hasn't been, doesn't mean they can't use it in certain patients, but they haven't been tested to give the full seal of approval. But they also, that population is also the one that shows the least amount of issues and problems with getting the infection. Typically, it's mild, if not asymptomatic, very similar to a common cold, which is not uncommon in children from ages of 1 to 16. So
it's not necessarily more dangerous if a 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old gets the,
nope,
the
not
shot.
At all. It's no. And it's just as long as the child has an intact immune system, doesn't have any underlying health conditions, they would respond the same way. So part of it is because the older population is at the highest risk. So while they're immunizing the older population and working its way down, they also at the same time doing testing on younger population. So that approval probably won't happen until the end of this year or beginning of next year. So, okay.
Thank you so much for that. Jenny, is there another question?
Oh yes. One watcher has read that acetaminophen, aspirin, or ibuprofen should not be taken prior to the vaccine. However, one of the panelists evidently mentioned that they took an leave a few days after getting the vaccine. And I know I have a mother who takes Aleve regularly for back pain. Does she need to not be taking that before and after getting the vaccine, which she scheduled this Friday?
Again, I talked to my local hospital pharmacist. They said it was okay. We have a pharmacist down there.
It's fine. It's fine. What it is because why they're recommending it is because they want to say if you're going to have a reaction, it's hard to tell if you blunt the response. So, for example, Dr. Kerrigan had a fever. So they give a blanket statement saying don't use acetaminophen or any non-steroidal like Aleve or Motrin beforehand because you may blunt if you're having a side effect from it. But the reality is that if you've after your flu vaccine, for example, or so you get your tetanus shot, and a day later you're sore and you take acetaminophen or Aleve and it works for you, then it's fine. That's the reason why they give the recommendation. So there's recommendations that has to be across the board, and the recommendations that your physician and as well or pharmacist would give you for you individually. So that I think you would want to talk to the individuals that know you the best to kind of make that decision. So I would say I don't know if you ever need to pre-take it before their shot, but there's no harm in doing so. And the reason why is just they want to keep track if they are having side effects. So that's why.
Gotcha.
So and it's very common. It's common for all vaccines. So they'll tell you that even for a flu vaccine that you don't pre, but as well, the practitioners, they know certain patients are prone to having certain reactions. It's actually the situations where you actually pre-dose with preventative for that reason.
So basically, the reason they suggest not to is so that if you have a reaction, you can respond to it appropriately.
And they want to learn about if there are going to be reactions. So knock on wood, it's been fairly mild in the majority of patients so far. So.
And professionally, and this might go for all of you, what do you say to those patients that express concern about getting the vaccine because it is new and they would prefer to wait and see how people react to it or what the effects might be?
Yeah, there are at least 70,000 people just in one trial. And there's so many ongoing trials. So before the vaccine was released to the public, all that work was done for us. And so these vaccines are found to be safe and effective. The unusual person that has a side effect that is so much more rare than anyone getting the infection itself. There's been a couple reported cases. Someone might have heard of someone in Florida with their platelets dropping. We don't know if there was any relationship with the vaccine at all. When you're giving this many vaccines, people are going to have events. Whether or not that's related to the vaccine, we don't know. But what we do know is all these vaccines that are on the market now have been tested with thousands of people and are safe and effective.
Look around. We're wearing masks. We're about 6 feet, but we're wearing our masks. We all know people whose lives have been devastated by something that vaccines can prevent. So, yes, Good news is Dr. Tony Fauci and I are like this. We went to the same college, but he was 10 years ahead of me. But nevertheless, the latest data, now I didn't watch the news tonight because I'm here, but the latest data was so far the vaccine seems to be getting all those viral things that are out there. But please, please, please get this one into your system and let the technologist work on things that it does. But yes, don't wait for the better vaccine, okay? You might wait too long.
What's the medical school, by the way, that you all went to?
Well, I went to college.
Well, college together. Very cool. All right. Were you going to say something, Dr. Kerrigan?
Well, yeah. Many vaccine experts say that once you hit the 3 million doses given mark, you're golden. You've got all the information you need. So what are we up to, 12 million now, I think, last I heard. So I really think we're at a place where we've administered enough that if we were going to see a trend of serious early onset reactions, we would have seen them by now.
And one thing I'll add is that they've done a really good job of making sure they pick across the demographics that match the country. So we have race, age, ethnicity, other medical conditions. So they didn't pick like all healthy individuals. For example, they picked across the gamut of individuals from 18 to like 100 with different conditions as well as different races, because everyone can react a little differently to this. So they really took a very scientific approach to make sure that what we're trying to do is going to represent the results we get should fairly represent our country, which I think all of us would appreciate, because we want the whole country to get better, not just certain subset of individuals. So
that's a good point. Jenny, I know that we have people here in person that might have questions. Do you want to do one more question from the internet, and then we'll do some in-person questions and then go back? How's that?
Yep, that would be great. The next question I have up is, what happens if I get a first dose and then when the next dose is due, and I know for myself I was automatically scheduled for my second dose, when the next dose is due, the vaccine isn't available for some reason because of it going hither and yon.
You have to set aside two doses if it's a two-dose vaccine when you give the first shot. So our office has not gotten any vaccines in yet, but we're in the process of, you know, waiting for them and establishing the protocols that we need to do. And we have to set aside two doses for each first dose, you know, so you should have one locked in for you. If anybody wants to, it has a different experience.
No, see, all of us, when we got our vaccine, they literally, as we're checking in for a first shot, they've already registered us for our second shot, for the follow-up. So it's already planned. And the reason they do that is so that way we make sure that we have enough vaccine for the individuals that day. And, you know, that way none's wasted, and as well as we actually can assure getting to that 95%, which is what we all desire. So.
Some in-person questions from folks who might like to ask.
Anybody?
Yes, my question is kind of twofold, but the first part is, this vaccine, do we know yet, is there any data that's saying that we need to get this annually, such as the flu shot, or could it be maybe representative of the shingles, say, every few years or what? And then secondly, when there will come a time where the majority of us are vaccinated, how much more caution can we throw to the wind in regards to our PPE or any of the other cautionary efforts that we have in place?
Well, I just don't think we know the answers to those questions, and I think it's going to be a while before we know the answers to those questions. We don't know for sure how long the antibodies are going to last in our system. I don't think it's going to be the same for every person. Different people have different immune responses and different durations of the antibodies. And so that's one of the questions I think will remain to be answered. Long-term, we just don't know. There's going to be mutations in the virus. So far, the vaccines have been effective for those mutations. But there's never going to be an all or none. There's going to be a continuum of more risk or less risk. And eventually, we'll get to the point where people will be able to manage that on their own. But I don't know if we'll get to a zero risk point. I don't know if somebody else has their input on that also.
herd immunity, you know, which is what we're trying to achieve, so we can, you know, relax the PPE and so much of the concern, is going to take place at about 60% of the population vaccinated. So I think at that point, when we get to a combination of established cases and percent and number of people vaccinated that equals approximately 60% of the population, we'll really be able to breathe a sigh of relief, assuming that this virus has the characteristics that we think it has, where it's not going to, where the vaccines are going to cover any of the mutations and things like that. It's just too early to know if that's going to bear out. But, you know, that's, I take heart in the fact that 60% is not a bad, that is definitely an achievable number for our population. And that number is a function of the fact that the vaccines are so effective. Because there's a calculation for how many percentage of the population needs to be vaccinated in order to achieve long-standing herd immunity. And it's a function of how good your vaccine is. And these vaccines are, you know, at least from what we know right now, very, very good. So I think it's doable. I think it's achievable, if that gives you any hope.
Folks who are watching and they have no idea. They've heard it on the news. They've heard politicians talk about it, but they have no idea what herd immunity is. Who can explain herd immunity? Dr. Baisley, can you explain herd immunity?
If a good number of people are immune to a certain disease process, it shuts it down, so it's not going to be spreading hither, dither, and yon the way it was before.
If I could add one thing, there's two ways of getting herd immunity. One is everybody getting infected or getting vaccinated. So I'm not saying in tongue-in-cheek, but that's the reality, is that to achieve herd immunity, which would provide, and the whole point is to protect those that can't get the vaccine for various reasons. There's going to be a subset that cannot. So to achieve that, you either get through vaccination programs that we're trying to do right now, or by majority of individuals getting infected. So the reason why scientists are like pushing herd immunity and vaccination is because of that. The two choices, one is more grim than the other. And again, I don't need to belabor which choice is better. It's more about sharing really the two choices that we have as a society, and why immunizations are so important is because we have some control in one avenue, another avenue we don't. So.
Thank you.
That's
reason to get your friends and family to encourage them to get vaccinated too, because that's really going to be the difference in how quickly we get there and if we get there. So the more people that you can convince to get vaccinations, the better.
I like to explain herd immunity to my patients. I tell them to imagine a bumper pool table, you know, the octagonal table with the bumpers in the middle, and you got to get the ball across the table, but you got to bounce it off the bumpers. Well, the more people that are vaccinated or have had the disease, the more bumpers you've got in that table. And when the ball hits the bumper, it disappears because it can't be transmitted. It can't bounce off that bumper. So imagine if you're playing bumper pool and you're trying to get the ball in the hole, but every time it hits a bumper, the ball disappears. You're never going to get many balls in the hole, and eventually you're going to run out of balls. So this is herd immunity. It's putting more and more bumpers into the system so that the virus can't attach onto one person, and that one person can spread it around. Because if you're vaccinated and you have an efficient immune response, you're not going to shed as much virus, even if you get a mild infection, and that virus isn't going to circulate with you as the center of the circulation. So I just like that analogy. I think it makes sense and encourages people to participate to help the community.
Thank you for that. Did you have something,
yeah,
Dr. Kasnick?
I would say one thing that can change in the near term is if you have a close set of family or friends and you're assured that they're all vaccinated, to me you can be a little more comfortable in that setting than you can in a public setting.
I was just going to say, a real-life application would be if you wanted to catch up with some cousins at an Airbnb in the Smoky Mountains. If all, say, a group of six of you are all vaccinated, you can do so safely without masks. Obviously, you don't want to be sharing drinks and food, but you can feel fairly certain, outside of any other health conditions, that you'd be fine. But once you leave your, almost like your bubble of the Airbnb, and you go into town, then you'd have to do the six feet away, wash your hands, wear a mask, and so forth. But like Dr. Kasnick said, there's going to be some alleviation of some of these social stresses that we have, because we kind of miss
the social part of, you know, our daily lives. So that is another reason to encourage being able to, you know, get vaccinated, and another kind of real life application of that. So
also, this is a church. We know about herds and sheep and shepherds.
Huh.
This is our chance to be a leader. Do you want to sit on the side and hope 60% got it, so you're not going to get it? Or is this the time? I'm not going to wave an American flag. I'm going to wave a common sense flag. It's time to step up. Please get the immunization.
That's an interesting phrase that you use. I was texting yesterday with Senator Kenny Yuko, who's the minority leader of our Ohio State Senate, and he was commenting about the event that we're having tonight. And he said, thank you. He was talking about our church and each of you who are here as our panelists. Thank you for stepping up at this crisis time to really inform and help our community. And so I appreciate that very much, that each of you are doing that tonight. Now, this event has been boosted for the last week on President-elect Biden's inaugural site, and this video is going out to all of his supporters tonight and anybody else who wants to watch. He is supposed to be saying in his inaugural address on Wednesday that he would like to have 100 million people injected within the next 100 days, the first 100 days of his administration. What, may I ask each of the panelists to reflect, since this is going out on his website, reflect on that. Do you think it's possible? Do you think it's doable? And how do you think we get there?
Each of the hospitals currently have a system involved called the Hospital Incident Command System, where each of the hospitals in town is trying to figure out how to give the doses as timely they can. The key is the supply of the vaccine. And so given that fact, if indeed the president, and he's in charge, is able to get the doses released, and again, the pharmaceutical companies know if they give dose number one, they have to have number two available for 21 to 28 days later. So yes, I think coming from that seat, that can happen, because the hospitals have set up the systems. The pharmacies have come through big time on this. And so seriously, with a joint, you know, combined effort like that, I think it's doable. I don't know how much is stored in the warehouse at Moderna or Pfizer right now. But bottom line is, when the president tells you to do it, that's usually going to be more effective.
That's good. Anybody else have a reflection about that?
No. I'm just excited to hear it. I think we're going to make some progress, and I think that we're going to move forward, and we have to keep optimistic about that.
Amen.
So logistics, now it's logistics. It's not about interest or desire to vaccinate majority of individuals. So
I think now it's moved to the forefront of administration. The hope is that they'll take it more seriously to help connect the dots, connect the patients with the providers with the vaccine. So
that's great. Well, Jenny, is there another question from the audience or here in person? Questions, we'll be coming back to you in just a moment.
After some research, I've found that some are concerned about the effect of the vaccine being a contraceptive. Your thoughts, and how long, if that is true, will that last?
Who would like to answer that question?
I've seen no data on that.
There's no data. So that's one of the concerns was, how does the vaccine interplay with contraception, and there's no data that's shown that. It was one of the concerns, and some of these concerns can be valid because it's something new, it's new technology, and so people's their personal beliefs and their kind of how they view new technology may play a role in kind of their thought process, but when they've done data and they've discussed, a lot of individuals have been tested, and that's, they look for anything from a headache all the way down to death in terms of side effects and effects on the body. So they've tested for everything, and they've examined and reviewed the data repeatedly and continuously for that, and they've not shown any connection with that at all. So
I researched this because I was kind of interested in when I heard about it, and I think, at least from my perspective, there might be other concerns out there, but the concern was that the messenger RNA that codes for the viral spike protein, that viral spike protein has a similarity to a protein complex that's involved in placental growth and development. know if you've heard this. Anyway, so that could cause infertility in the future for people that get the vaccine. Well, the vaccine's coding for a protein that's on the virus. So if the vaccine is producing a protein that's on the virus, and you get the virus, like the wild type, you just get infected with COVID, you'd have the same risk. So it doesn't really make scientific sense to me, because that would mean that the risk of getting COVID would increase your risk of having placental implantation issues. And, you know, we haven't seen that. I don't know if the vaccine's been studied much in pregnant women. I do know that the recommendation right now is that you can give the vaccine to pregnant and lactating women, but it's they advise that you talk to your gynecologist, OBGYN, and doctor before you do that. So,
and a lot of that came from people's thought that, if you recall, a few years back with the Zika virus that was down in the Caribbean as well as South America, they showed that it did cause some preconception. If it was infected preconception, then it could cause some congenital issues, but different kind of virus, different kind of role it played. And so the beauty of this technology is that this vaccine and the mRNA mimics the actual infection from the coronavirus. And then once it gives the message, it degrades, and so it does not circulate through the body, which is one of the concerns because of the technology. So again, people's thought process isn't out there that's unreasonable, but as we get more information and we hone in on what really is this technology, we feel very confident that individuals, including our special population that are pregnant or trying to conceive, they are protected and they should not have any issues with the vaccine.
Well, thank you very much. For those of our in-person audience, if you have more questions, please save them up. We'll come back to you in just a moment. But I'm sure there are a long list of questions online. So, Jenny, what do we have waiting for us for our online audience?
Again, we're having some additional questions on people being able to cross county lines to get the vaccine. If they go on the Lucas County Health Department and they do not live in Lucas County, there is nothing keeping them that you are aware of from signing up for the vaccine, correct?
It's only if which phase are they in? So they're not going to provide, for example, if Dr. Kerrigan has to go into Lucas County, she's typically Wood County, then she's part of 1A, they're not going to necessarily hinder her from doing it. But individuals hopping, especially when it goes into the 65 and over and then the general population afterwards, try and hop around, I think it'd be more challenging, because to get the vaccine to be pre-registered, it's not like walking into a pharmacy or a doctor's office and say, I need my shingles vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if they qualify and you're not going from here to like Indianapolis to try to get it done,
gotcha,
then I'd find it hard to believe that because this is a public health service, right, that's being provided, I'd find it hard. I can't say 100%. I can tell you from my personal experience, because I do in-home vaccinations. So when I talked to Lucas County, they said, yeah, like you are in Lucas County and Wood County, so you qualify for either one. But
and most of the people that I see sending this question in, I believe either have lived in Lucas County or their doctors, their physicians, the hospitals they go to are in Lucas County.
Yeah.
And so they do come for their health care here. So it would maybe make sense for them.
Well, what will be good is when it goes to the general population, they'll be able to use the guidance of the practitioners to actually direct them. Because Dr. Kerrigan, for example, if her practice may have patients from like Hancock County, but if they come up, but they're seen at her office, then they'll be able to take care of it, because Dr. Kerrigan knows that patient the best. So when we're trying to manage side effects and what expectations the person should have, no one in this room would have a better handle on it than Dr. Kerrigan, because she knows her patients the best. So I think there's some flexibility that will be allowed. I think that they recommend that. They don't want you driving, from one hotspot to another hotspot to get a vaccine, I think is what their goal is to avoid. So.
That brings up the point about people who have traveled to other states. Apparently there hasn't been a problem with going to another state and saying, hey, I need the vaccine. So maybe they're not maybe it's not dependent necessarily on where you're from. I don't know. That would be an interesting question. Are they going to ask you, where are you from? Let me see your ID before they give you the vaccine, or they're just going to give you the vaccine? What do you think?
I personally think it's going to be site-dependent. I think whatever site that is going to have their own rules as to vaccinating.
Each state has their own rules. That's one of the challenges we have right now is each state. I know Ohio actually doing a very good job compared to some other states, but like West Virginia is even doing better because each state has their own policy and their own rule. So that's why, I mean, biggest thing is, you'll get a card stating when you got your vaccination. That is like gold. You do not want to lose that. So we all keep it with us all the time because when you get your next dose, if it's not necessarily if the same county, for example, then you can feel comfortable that you have it and it's been validated and it means something if you do want to meet with friends or travel or whatnot. So
you can prove that you had the vaccine.
Yeah, and that's it's a big, like, for example, you know, type
I hadn't heard about the card.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you first. So I'm Canadian and my parents live in Canada. So I haven't seen my parents for like 18 months because of this. So once I get my, once we're, the border opens up again, it'll be very nice for me to be able to say, here's the card. It's validated because from the CDC, so I should get to see my parents. I haven't seen in a long time. So that's like a real, and I bring this up as a real life example, like the Airbnbs that, that's what people really want to know is like, what is it? It's great vaccination. So how is it going to affect life? And that's really our hope and our goal. Now, it's, we have a long ways to go, but the first step is to get vaccinated. So, you know.
We are coming up on our first hour. We've got one more hour to go. So if you have questions, be sure to send those in so we can get to your question. You did mention West Virginia. We have friends who are tuning in from West Virginia tonight. And I saw on the national news, perhaps you all did the other day, I think it was Friday night, that it was reported that West Virginia has vaccinated more people than any other state to this point. So I don't know what they're doing to do that so quickly, but it's interesting to think about that. Any reflections on that? Have you all heard that news?
Yes, it's because the governor asked all the, and this is a little, because I'm a pharmacist, I have to say this. The governor went to all the pharmacies and said, can you help us get to the outlying areas? They said, the hospitals, we have logistics to help that out, but how do we help the individuals in the community?
So if Governor DeWine goes to all of our pharmacies and says, can you help us get to the outlying areas, the same thing would happen here.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's interesting. They went to all the small pharmacies that have, like, you know, 2,000-person little rural town. But they said, can you help us with like, the, say, the 20 long-term care patients
there? That's fascinating.
So that's why, that's the one challenge is each state's a bit different in terms of how they, the hierarchy and logistics and so forth. So it's a learning process. This is first time since 1918, so we're kind of figuring out what the best thing to do is. So.
That's fantastic. Well, since we're a neighboring state to West Virginia, let's hope that we can step it up too and get to even more people. All right. Jenny, is there another question from our online audience?
Yes, there are lots. I have several questions on what would be the recommendation as far as a vaccine to women who are currently in fertility treatment. And also, what if one has cancer? Would the vaccine be recommended?
So I can take the question on cancer. So the main thing is each patient, if especially you're on active treatment, they need to talk with their oncologist about the timing of the vaccine. There are certain drugs we use, antibodies, for which we would want them to wait at least 4 months and maybe longer to get the vaccine. Not because the vaccine would be harmful to them, but because the vaccine may not be effective in those first several months. But there's many different medications that we use in cancer and many different mechanisms of action. And so the important thing is to discuss that with your oncologist. Because again, if you went out and got the vaccine, it may not be effective, but yet you'd be operating with the understanding that it was effective. And so now, in most cases, we are telling people to go ahead and get the vaccine. But there are exceptions to that, and that's why it's important to discuss that with your oncologist.
And the fertility physicians would be the experts in those cases. So if you're getting treatments for infertility, you need to talk to your physician about that. But as we mentioned before, in the American College of Obstetrics Gynecology, feels at this point in time the vaccine is safe for people who are pregnant and trying to get pregnant. But in that situation, that patient would need to contact the fertility specialist to get their read on the process.
Okay, thank you. How about the next?
Okay, one question, and I'm sure this is going to be important to a lot of people in the Toledo area and north of us. Is it okay to get your first dose in Toledo, and then when you travel south, as long as it's the same company, get the same dose down south? Now, I know for me, when I made my appointment, they said, make sure you're available for the second one on this date at this time. So your opinion on that as far as, is it okay to get it here, or should they?
I think I'll let the pharmacist address the logistics of that.
Exactly. I'm assuming we're talking about the general population. So talking about the general population, I believe that's probably going to be the reality, is that people are going to want to have the flexibility where they get one dose in, you know, in, say, in my pharmacy, and then they're like, they happen to be at another, at their family in Columbus, and they get their second shot. I don't know if they, at the same time, really encouraging it, because part of 1A and now in 1B for the phase, they're also learning, they're collecting information. They want to know, when we go back for a second shot, they're going to ask us, so how did you do after your shot? Did you have any symptoms? How long did they last for? Because they're all entering in, because hopefully the general population realizes that as the kind of the phases are going for the most vulnerable population, but with each phase we're collecting information that is going to only help bolster our information that we can share with the general population. So I can foresee, to answer your question, individuals getting a dose in one spot and getting their second dose somewhere else, just as long as that, right now we have that card, eventually I'm sure it will be app driven, we'll have an app and like a mobile passport that will basically show that when we got this and so forth, and it'll be kind of one place for us to use. And that's the whole benefit of this, is there's some utility to us getting vaccinated and keeping track of it, because right now pharmacies, we keep track of it, the physicians keep track of it, but the general individuals say, oh, I think I got my tetanus shot, I don't remember when. But this is like a something that's kind of raising awareness that we do need to keep track of this kind of stuff. So
it's the way the vaccine is being released.
When I got my shot, I was told on January 20th, I get shot number two. Be here. And people are being told that fairly regularly in most situations, because it's supply and demand. If I decide to jet off to Florida for a weekend because I can't stand the weather and I miss my date, there is, I believe, about a 4-day grace period that you can get the shot a couple days later, and it still works well. And according to what my hospital pharmacist led me to believe, if you would get Moderna with the first dose and then, you know, the nurse grabbed the wrong vial and you got Pfizer with the second dose, it shouldn't fight each other. There shouldn't be any major interaction. It's still probably effective, and you don't need to get vaccine number three. But its reality check is, when you get the first shot, you're committing to the second shot. And therefore, you should try to avoid traveling in those situations, because the site that gave you the first one is the one that got the supply from the government, from the pharmaceutical companies, to give you shot number two. That's where you want to be. That's how you get your 95% immunity.
Very, very good. Well, when we're waiting for a few more questions, Dr. Baisley, you brought a handout for us. It's called Ohio's Vaccination Program. Everybody who is here in person received one of these. If you would like to have one, you're one of our virtual guests, please be sure to email us info@Epworth.com, or you can comment in the feed that Jenny Vansel is watching for us. We'll be happy to scan this and email it out to you. If you don't have email, we'll be happy to mail it to you through snail mail. But Dr. Baisley, would you explain this handout to us?
Some states, I believe Michigan has started to roll out the 1B schedules for people over 65. Governor DeWine, God love him, decided to be nicest to the people over 80 and then tear it down. So January 19th, 80 and above. January 25th, next week, 75 and above. February 1st, 70 above. February 8th, age 65 and above. But bottom line is, yes, our senior citizens are more compromised in various ways. They can't deal with some of these things the way younger people can. And so far and away, they're the people that deserve to get the vaccine first, and that's why I tiered it out this way.
Thank you for this handout. It's interesting. There's a really big strip at the bottom that's in yellow or gold, and it says, all available vaccines will be administered to those who choose to receive it. That leads me to believe that he wants to make sure whoever in his Governor DeWine's administration wants people to know it's not a mandatory thing. Is that what you would think? He put that there so people know it's up to them.
Exactly right.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very, very much. If you would like one of these, we'll be more than happy to get it to you. Just let us know. Jenny, is there another question?
Since you pointed out the gold strip on the handout, we have a watcher who is asking, is it okay to not get the vaccine if you're healthy and never even had a flu shot?
That's interesting. Who wants to answer that one?
Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay. Dr. Kerrigan.
Say it again.
Is it okay? I mean,
Is it okay to not get the vaccine if you're healthy and you've never had a flu shot? And I know a lot of people who have not had flu shots, and so they are questioning whether they need to get a vaccine.
Since they never had a flu shot, they wonder if they should even have this because it's not been an issue. Their health isn't an issue. How would you all respond? I think I know how you'd respond to that, but what would you?
This is more deadly, devastating, and, you know, virulent, contagious than influenza. We've seen minimal influenza this year. Both the hospitals, the emergency departments, our office, things like that. It's either because we're all masking and we're hand washing and things like that, or maybe they finally got the virus right in terms of the flu vaccine this year. But whether you ever had the flu vaccine or not, it doesn't make any difference. This is a different virus. Please get the vaccine.
May I make a comment? So those individuals that haven't got the flu shot that say they haven't got the flu, it's because of herd immunity, because the majority of the population did get the flu shot. So that is a perfect example of what herd immunity is, because individuals choose to not get the flu shot, or they cannot get it for health reasons or religious reasons. So they're protected by the community, which is, again, what we keep preaching, that really to understand herd immunity, it's really is there's going to be certain subset of the population that won't be able to get the vaccine for various reasons, but the majority does get it, and that's how we protect society in order for us to move forward. So to answer the question, they are benefiting from all of us getting our flu shots and all of our patients getting their flu shots. So
I would just like to add to that in a different way, maybe, but saying the same thing, and that is, you know, we have to remember that we're in a community. We're not living our own lives by ourselves. And what we do in this case affects other people. When people say they want to smoke cigarettes or they want to eat this or that, that's affecting themselves and they have that right. But when you live in a community of people and what you do affects others, that's a different story. So people that decide not to get the vaccine, that's not just affecting them. It's affecting everyone around them. When people go to a store and they don't want to put a mask on, the mask is really protecting other people. So what they're doing is having a lack of respect for you. So I think we have to remember that we're not in this by ourselves, we're in this together, and that everyone should try to have that attitude about it, in my opinion.
Because of these vaccines, COVID is a preventable disease.
Ah, that's good to know. You said COVID is a preventable disease. Very good. Okay, another question.
We have one person putting in a question. They have a 90-year-old parent, and they are not able to find a location to have them vaccinated. Either there are no appointments yet, or the appointments are all filled. And I know I had gotten on the health department website where all the hospitals were listed and had to go through one by one until I found one with open appointments.
So that was a 90-year-old parent?
So, yeah, somebody's trying to get an appointment for their 90-year-old parent, and they're not having success at finding a place. Is it because they haven't received the vaccine yet, or they anticipate how many they're receiving, and so those appointments have filled up, and until they know they're getting more? I think you're going to have frustrations like that.
That's going to be reality. The logistics portion of this is going to be where the biggest challenge is, and that's where they're going to ask for people, for patients. It's ironic because we're asking everyone to get vaccinated, but then we're saying, but wait, until we figure out where we can slot you. So the good thing about that is that they're not going to – the worst case scenario for that question would be they give her a time slot, she shows up, and there's no vaccine.
So that's what they're trying. The health departments are trying to avoid. So what will happen is by getting pre-registered, which is one thing recommended on Lucas County's website as well as health department's website, as well as Wood County, to get pre-registered. They'll let you know, and if there's no openings, if they get a shipment of product, more dates will open up. No, so we get emails all the time. So I get emails from Wood County and Lucas County for my employees who were part of 1A saying, oh, we have two slots open on Friday. Do you, any of individuals still need to get vaccinated? So getting pre-registered is very important because then you're not obligated that you have to go. Like if you don't, you get punitive and get put to the bottom of the list. But that way, if new slots open up, then they'll be able to say, okay, well, let's move Mrs. Smith into that spot because she was waiting, but there wasn't anything available when she tried initially. So the biggest thing is that we're asking our patients in society to kind of be actively say you have to reach out and participate. You can't just kind of wait and say, well, my doctor always has a flu shot. I'll just go in there. And, you know, and unfortunately, this is a little bit different because there's a little bit of logistical maneuvering that needs to happen, at least in the initial phase. So,
and another reminder that's coming up is also that if there is a challenge in whether you don't have the technology available to you as far as internet access, that our local United Way and dialing 211 or the Area Office on Aging, those messages are also coming through as far as a helpful resource to some of these people, especially trying in these first few phases of getting their parents vaccinated just so that their parents are a little safer and able to navigate around more. So I think it's good to remind people that, you know, check with the health department, but the health department is being totally overloaded right now. But there are other avenues through the Area Office on Aging and United Way's 211 that are trying to help navigate this for our elderly community.
It's important to know, too, that just because... So she's 90 and she's thinking she should be in the 85 and older section. If she doesn't get in, they're not going to basically like skip her. So she'll still be in the 70 and older. So that's one of the concerns. One question we have is that, am I going to miss my window and do I have to wait until it goes up to the general population? No, we understand that our older individuals need protection first, and that's where they can work their way down. They're just trying to categorize it so there's not millions of people trying to get in line at the same time. So that's where they're trying to figure that out.
By the way, this broadcast is going to be archived at Epworth.com, and so you can go back, share it with friends and family. You can scroll through. If there's a specific question you want to get back to and kind of reflect on, please do so. This is a resource. These doctors have been kind enough to donate their time to help our community and to help our nation. And so we encourage you to use this, share it with friends and family, scroll through, get the questions answered that are most important for you. Jenny, let's do one more for our online, and then we'll do a couple of in-person questions.
Another person has shared that they know people who have gotten the shingles after receiving the shingles vaccine, their first dose. And I think you've spoken about similar circumstances with this vaccine as far as some of the results. But if you could repeat some of those comments for this particular listener.
Shingles.
If you have a reaction just as you would if you had a shingles vaccine, and sometimes you have a shingles reaction after the first or second dose. And is that the same with this?
Dr. Kerrigan, what do you think about that? Is it similar to a shingles reaction?
The shingles question is hard because there's actually two shingles vaccines. There's an old one that was kind of bad, and it only gave about 50% prevention of shingles. And that one's gone away, and now there's the newer one, which is the Shingrix, which is two-shot series. So some people say, I got the shingles vaccine, which was really the old one, and it wasn't very good, and they got the shingles. So I don't know if that's what this person is talking about or not, but I have really not had any experience with anybody that's gotten the Shingrix getting another shingles infection. So I don't know if Dr. Baisley might have some information on that. But I think maybe what she's trying to say is this going to produce a COVID-like reaction? And it's just going to produce mild symptoms, kind of like what I explained myself. So I kind of need more information to get to the heart of that one.
I think what we can say unequivocally, though, is that if she's saying that she had a mild case of shingles after having the shingles vaccine, you will not get COVID virus from getting this vaccine. You may have a side effect to it, but you will not get the virus, and that's what we know for sure.
Because the virus actually impacts your lungs and your breathing, and...
But you're not giving the virus. You're giving the blueprint for how to react to the virus.
Okay. And that's what's different versus the vaccines we've used in the past, where we're actually giving a dumbed-down version of the virus itself. So,
but if you had been exposed to the COVID-19 virus 3 or 4 days before you got the vaccine, unbeknownst to you, you could develop COVID-19 after that first COVID vaccination. But again, the COVID vaccination has no live virus. It cannot cause COVID-19 disease. But if you had been picking up and you hadn't developed the symptoms yet, it's possible. But again, no one's recommending doing antibody titers before you get the vaccine, nothing along that line. But in the normal sequence of things, if you'd been exposed and were in the process of getting it, you could get it. But again, that's the only way.
I think that's so important, and one of the most important things we've said tonight, because it's counterintuitive. People are used to getting injections of something that has, you know, some virus in it. So I think people can feel so much more safe realizing the virus isn't in the injection and that it won't cause you to get the virus unless, as you said, you were exposed in some other way unbeknownst to you. That's very, very helpful, I think, to all of us. All right, let's go back to our in-person folks, and we have a question there.
Yeah, I have a couple questions. When you pre-register, do they let you know on Lucas County website when there's availability? Do they email you, or how do they do that? And what sites are they going to be given this vaccination?
So once you register, are you asking if they will confirm the registration with you, that you'll know where to get the shot? Okay, what do you all think about that?
I haven't registered.
Yeah, so that for the Lucas County Health Department website, when you register, they'll say we have dates on, like, say, what was it, February 1st and February 5th, for example. And they'll say on the 1st they have times at, like, 8, 8:20. You know, they'll give you some times. What slots are available, which came to the question we had earlier, and then basically you know that 28 days later you'll be getting your second shot. If there aren't any slots available, say you're only available because of work, you're only available in the mornings on the 1st, then you'll say, I'm not available. You put in when your availability is, and so you do it tonight. Then by Friday, it says nothing's available. Friday, they may email you, say some slots opened up. So if you're, and they may tell you the same day, like we have situations where we got emailed the same day saying, oh, we have an opening at 4 o'clock, and it's like 2 o'clock. Because they don't want to waste a vaccine, so sometimes they may slot you in last minute. If it's open, and when we get to the general population, I'm sure there's going to be multiple spots. You may say, I want to be mommy and anytime on Thursday. You may have like 3 options for that. That's the goal is for the general population. Right now, because it's much smaller with the phases, it's really a lot tighter with the schedule, but they will let you know if spots open up. So
yeah, what sites are they going to have right now? Hospitals?
Well, so they will eventually right in all the county have it at the Lucas County Cancer Center on Key Street. They have it in there and set up all spaced out and so forth. And Wood County, I believe, had it at the hospital, right? So that's, again, we're phase 1A, so it's not smaller individuals, but with the general, they'll probably have it at pharmacies, and then each pharmacy will have their own kind of situation set up at doctor's offices, and they'll control the flow. And the whole goal is to not have a million people show up at one location, right? And that's why at the point where they'll have the general kind of selection, you may have a couple of choices on that day. They may say, hey, there's 3 mommy, 1 in Perrysburg, 1 in Monclova that may fit your schedule, because they may need to be a little bit flexible, but they won't say you have to go to, Oregon. You're like, you know, you work on the west side of the city, right? So,
on this handout, it reads coronavirus.ohio.gov. So that would be another good place to start to get information about where you can get the injection, etc. Coronavirus.ohio.gov. Thank you so much.
You know, it might be helpful for people to know that there's kind of a little process that you'll go through. And I'm sure it'll be different for different sites, but you go in and you'll register, and then they'll take your information, and then you wait, and you get the shot, and they take you back to a little room. At least this is my experience, but you actually get the vaccine administered, and then you have to wait there for 15 minutes so that they can monitor you for signs of an allergic reaction. And I had my shot at Wood County, so they had a pretty slick way of organizing it, where you sat at tables at each end of the table, and they went around the room asking how you were doing and monitoring things and then setting up your next vaccine appointment. So there is a little bit of a process there. And so it's not like we can just, like our office, our flu shot clinic this year was a drive-by. So people just drove by in their car and rolled down the window and we gave them a shot. And there they went. But you can't do that with this. You have to actually have that waiting period that's timed and monitored in case there is that rare event of anaphylactic reaction. So...
Thank you very much. What's the significance of 15 minutes as opposed to 20 minutes or 30 minutes?
Because the anaphylaxis, if it's going to happen, is going to happen in that window.
It's within that window of time?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you very much. Another in-person question? Anybody else? And then we'll go back to our online audience.
Good evening. Everything I read about the implementation strategy and even this handout involves adults 65 and over. What's the anticipated implementation strategy and timeline for those under 65?
I assume, bad word, that the governor is still trying to figure that out. I think he probably wants to see how well he rolls out for the targeted population, and if indeed he gets good numbers there, I assume it'll be more of the same because the manufacturers are still making the vaccine. But I have a feeling it's his prioritization schedule. And again, we've never done this before. But I think on the scale of things, this sounds like a reasonable approach, especially the stepwise tiers. But I think that's what will happen. Yes, we're not going to forget the under 65s.
And we expect more vaccines to be approved in the near future, and that's going to increase the availability.
So they wouldn't necessarily do it 64 to 50, 50 to 35, that it might be a free-for-all or a floodgate, or it just hasn't been decided at this point.
It hasn't been decided. So what the thought process is that in, like, from March into April, so the goal is can we get everyone, majority of the population done by late spring? And honestly, the faster or the more complete we can get all the phases done, the earlier we can start vaccinating the general population, that will help us. But it has to do with supply demand and logistics, because just because Moderna has 5 million doses, how do they get to the doses out to the whole country and allocate it to the places that can use it? Because this is no good if we have, you know, our room here, we have a bunch of individuals that could use the dose, but I only have, like, you know, 100 doses, and we have 500 people here. Like, how do we choose? We try to avoid that part of it. So that's why they don't want to overpromise and underdeliver. So it's a very good question. I think part of it is that as we get the phases are completed, then, you know, the timeline moves up to when the general population can start getting vaccinated. And then, like discussed, as the new vaccines come in, we can slide them in, and that will expand our opportunities and possibilities. So
I will say that the overall goal will be to get everyone vaccinated within a finite period of time, because in order to get herd immunity, that's going to be needed, right? Because we don't know how long these antibodies are going to last in our system, and we have to get everyone vaccinated soon enough before the antibodies are gone from the first people that got vaccinated.
Very, very good. Thank you. Any other in-person questions before we go back to our internet audience? Anybody else here that just raise your hand if you have a question, please?
I might add one thing in that no one brought up, that can you still transmit the virus after you've got vaccinated? And the answer is that we don't know for sure, and for the time being, we have to assume that you can transmit. In other words, you could get the flu virus inside of you, but the vaccine is preventing you from having any effects of that virus. We don't know yet if you could have a piece of that antigen, just not enough
to cause an infection, but enough to spread to somebody else. So for the time being, even if you're vaccinated, you can't assume that you can transmit that to somebody else.
Wow, that's a very interesting point. Do you know how long it'll be till we do know that?
Well, the initial studies did not have that as an endpoint, but some of the follow-up studies did. So I think we will have that information, okay. But I'm not sure exactly when.
Okay, that's a very interesting point. Dr. Baisley.
Hence the masks.
Ah.
And if you notice, all of us have the masks over our noses. That's the correct way. Whether you want to try to influence other citizens when it happens to drop before their nose, it's your decision. But basically, over the nose.
Well, thank you for that. I fly quite a bit, and before you go on the aircraft, before you even go down the jet bridge, they make sure that the mask is appropriately placed. And it's very interesting to see different parts of the country how they're handling it. But you might run into a store and somebody has it on their cheek or somewhere on their forehead. I don't know. But it's interesting to see how people wear the mask.
Please paste your mask in the full and upright locked position.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's very good. Anybody else in person have a question? Otherwise, we'll go back to our online audience. But we didn't want to neglect our folks who are here in person. Anybody else? All right.
I know one question that has been coming up on the screen as well, and you're mentioning additional vaccines coming out. Is there a difference? Is there one vaccine that would be the better choice if you have a choice? I think Moderna, and there are some definite differences between Moderna and Pfizer in the length of time, and also how cold the Pfizer vaccine needs to be kept versus the Moderna. But what are we going to see as future vaccines roll out, and is one more effective than the other?
Well, one hopeful thing is some of the new vaccines are just one shot, and so that'll be an advantage not only in terms of personally having to go through one shot, but in terms of logistics, only having to deliver one shot. I think with each vaccine, we will know ahead of time what the percentage effectiveness of that vaccine is, and none of them will allow for allow you to get the virus, but there may be a somewhat lower level of effectiveness. When you think about the flu vaccine, we've never had anything close to 90% on a flu vaccine. So one of the best things that's happened is that these vaccines are 95% effective. I don't think anyone predicted that would be so high going into it. So that's the wonderful thing. And then we have to wait as these new vaccines get approved to see what their effectiveness rate is.
Thank you. Anybody else have a comment about that?
The nice thing is that we have good experience with two vaccines so far. So we have something to gauge against as the new vaccines do come through, and they're using a little different technology. And so the side effect profile, the expectations, what percentage coverage you'll get may vary, and that's what we're going to learn, but we actually have a good place to start in order for us to answer some questions as they come in. So the one dose may be more convenient, but if it's only 80%, then maybe we choose that for our less than 20 population. So we can allocate, as we have more options, to best fit certain segments of the population. So that's exciting, because typically with the flu vaccine, you're going to get the coverage, you know, we accept 40 to 60% with the flu vaccine on typically every year, but each manufacturer that makes it, it's pretty much the same within that range. But with the new options, with the new vaccine, because they're using a little different technology, we have options. And if we can allocate to the best population, then that's in our favor. So make sure that the patients that are at the highest risk get the ones with the, you know, the more robust coverage. So I think that's exciting and something that's technology is definitely important here.
I'm going to venture away from science here for a minute. It might be at risk, but and this may come up, and some people are aware of it, some people aren't. There are ethical considerations with the other vaccines. I'm a practicing Catholic, and the American Council of Catholic Bishops and some bioethic committees for Catholics are recommending that if you can choose which vaccine to get, that the Pfizer and the Moderna are the best vaccines, the AstraZeneca vaccine and the other vaccine from another manufacturer, the DNA vaccines. There's a question of whether they were, the question of their being developed in a fetal cell line from aborted fetuses in the 70s. This is a big issue for a lot of Catholics, a lot of practicing religious people. I won't make many comments other than to point this out and to tell people to do their own due diligence on it and come to terms with it themselves. And you can, the websites that you can access that are affiliated with the, you know, the established Catholic organizations are treating this very fairly, in my opinion, and are not discounting the efficacy or the power of vaccines, or they are definitely not discouraging people from getting the vaccines. But, you know, just because I think this is something that if you hold a certain set of beliefs you would like to know in advance, you probably should know in advance so you can make an informed decision.
Well, thank you, Dr. Karen. Anybody else have a comment about that particular subject?
That just reiterates the fact that we're having options is great, because that way we can allocate to the right individuals based on health, age, as well as personal beliefs, and we still can get the success with getting majority of individuals vaccinated. So again, it's exciting times that I don't think all of us realize we're part of something that's so pronounced that in 50, 100 years from now, they'll look back and say, wow, they did this amount of time and everybody bought in. For the greater good, I think that we don't give ourselves enough credit as a society, especially in these trying times. So I think we should all give ourselves a round of applause for at least trying to do the best that we can as being the best humans possible. So,
thank you very much. We've got about 30 more minutes, friends, before we conclude. The last about 8 to 10 minutes, we'll do some closing statements and some wrap-up time. So we have roughly 20 minutes to get some more questions in. So please be sure to get those in if you have any questions. Jenny, what's the next online question that we have?
I have one person asking, I think what we're seeing is the vaccine being given in the arm. I know for me, they asked, which arm would you prefer, which one is more dominant? Is there another location other than the arm where they are giving this vaccine?
That's interesting. Since I'm right-handed, I prefer to get my vaccine in my left arm. Whatever. I don't think it works any better right-handed, left-handed, or anything along that line. And the arm is a lot easier to reach than other parts of your anatomy you might want to give an injection into. So,
it's just convenient, more convenient for the arm, is that right?
I'd stick with the arm.
Okay.
How to get to it, it's easy for access as well as what to expect. Other parts of the body, I think it'd be more challenging to administer as well as to do follow-up. So,
your comment was very interesting. When I went to get my vaccine, they asked me which was my dominant, and I said right, and they right away said, well, we want to give it to you then in your right arm because you'll use it more, and if you use it, it won't become quite as sore.
Is that a valid thing? If you use it more, it'll be less sore?
I venture to say that's a little weak scientifically.
Okay.
unless my colleagues...
I mean, I ended up getting mine in my left, and again, the soreness was minimal and nothing that I couldn't just, flex it a little bit and work it out, but...
I think it counts as a workout as well, so you can see that your muscles are sore for that, so that...
Got another question from our online audience.
Anybody out here?
Okay, we've gotten them all. How about any other questions from our in-person audience? Otherwise, I will move to our wrap-up comments, which will take us a little while as well, but we'll give it a couple minutes because we have folks who are tuning in all across the country. We'll make sure they get all their questions in. Any comments you might have?
I did want to make one mention. We talked about drugs and the therapies used in oncology. Anyone that has a rheumatologic condition, also lupus, et cetera, they should also check with their doctors regarding the timing of the vaccines, because a lot of the same types of antibodies are used and can interfere with the effectiveness of the vaccine.
That's interesting. Very, very good. Thank you. Jenny, tell us a little bit more about your experience. How did you make your appointment? What was it like? You can come on up to camera because people can't see you. I wanted you to share about what it was like to get your injection.
First of all, I cannot stress enough how easy it was to sign on and make the appointment. I was actually offered it because I work for Lott Industries and through the Board of Developmental Disabilities of Ohio. And so once I got on the website and chose the date and the time, and it was at Lucas County Rec Center, it automatically scheduled me for the second one 4 weeks later. And we were told to come in a half an hour before the scheduled appointment. We got there at 12:30. My appointment was at 1 o'clock. A colleague that I work with, who happens to also be my sister, her appointment was six minutes later. It was like clockwork. And everyone from the registration right on to the healthcare professionals administering the shot were so supportive, enthusiastic, and very encouraging. And we actually went in, did the pre-registration. It took us less than 10 minutes. And we got our shot and sat for 15 minutes. And we were actually out 10 minutes before our scheduled time of 1 o'clock and 1:06. Both my sister and I had nothing but a sore arm for a day and a half afterwards. And so from my personal experience, and again, because I have family that I would like to be around, I enjoy traveling. That has been extremely curtailed over this past year, that I can't encourage my family enough of the value of this, and friends, of the value of this, and try to encourage them to, you know, get the vaccine, help others in your community by getting the vaccine. I go and serve the homeless with a team of of our Epworth members every Wednesday morning. And I do worry about the individuals that don't have access like we do. And I'm so thankful for organizations in our community that are trying to reach the underserved. Because, again, those are the populations that are going to be the most vulnerable, along with our elderly populations. And so we need to try and do what we can do to protect them from us. And so, again, I just can't encourage people enough to, you know, sign up, get the vaccine.
Thank you very much, Jenny, for that experience.
You know, one reminder is that if you've had the COVID virus already, you do still need to get vaccinated. We know those antibodies last, but we're not sure how long they do last. And so just if you yourself or have a friend or family that had the virus, it does not mean they don't need to be vaccinated.
Thank you very much. Are there any other questions online or here in person? Just raise your hand, let us know, and we'll be more than happy. Anything?
I do have some more. Okay. If you travel a lot, if you are a truck driver, repair techs, delivery personnel, how important is it for you to get a vaccine?
Are you living and breathing in America today? Yeah, it's important, and you're the person that needs to sign up via the website, whatever, and make sure, realizing they'll give you the appointment for shot number two when you get shot number one. But yes, and yeah, and there is a, you know, each state is putting this, each pharmacy, each hospital is putting this into the state registry. So my shot is in the state registry for Ohio. Likewise, Michigan's is up there. So it's all in a record. So, but yeah, it's very important for a truck driver. Yes, yes.
Thank you. Any other questions?
What medical conditions would qualify one for an early vaccine or to be in a current phase versus waiting for the age?
Is there a medical condition that would get you up higher relative to your age or not? No.
I think in Ohio right now there is not. It's age-based. That differs from state to state. But if anything, the trend is going towards age without regard to health condition.
Okay.
We always worry about people that are obese tend to get more serious disease. Diabetics get more serious disease, and people with underlying heart conditions. So I think those people of all ages should be the most concerned about getting the vaccine and, you know, being persistent to get it.
But for right now, as far as we know, it's age-directed in Ohio.
And then according to Ohio's guidelines, January 25th, those rollouts, age 75 and older, plus those with severe congenital, developmental, and early onset medical disorders. So that subgroup of people.
And that's, I mean, physicians will be able to guide individuals. If you have a history of COPD, for example, or emphysema, individuals that are higher risk. So what we try to figure out is individuals, that if they got the infection and especially the respiratory component, who will do worse than an individual at the same age without that condition. That's kind of how they can engage it. Again, it's just strongly recommended to follow the guidelines and follow your practitioner, because your physician's going to know you the best, and you'll probably listen to the physician the best if they strongly recommend. It's not perfect, but I think they'll give you the best kind of guidance that you need. So,
thank you very much. I think we can take a couple more questions, maybe two more if there are any. Otherwise, we'll move to wrap up.
Well, some have just actually mentioned, like, the severe congenital or cerebral palsy or Down syndrome. And another person also mentioned that the vaccine, when it becomes available for under 65, it also indicates people with severe medical conditions or teachers K through 12. So I think they're starting to add in some of the other professions.
Like California, for example, has moved up the K through 12 teachers because they want to try to open up the schools again. So I think each state's coming up with their own guidelines. And honestly, we don't know what the best guidelines are. It's a learning process that we're trying to figure out. And that's why we ask community to be patient, because these guidelines may change from week to week. And that's just because as we get more information, we're trying to update the recommendations.
And another, came through, and it's, I think this is a very important one to address from this panel, is how do we educate better around the misinformation that is coming out? They refer specifically to contaminated vaccines or tainted vaccines. How do you respond to that, or how do we as an organization here, being responsible to our members, also help them understand and help guide away from the misinformation that's coming out?
You know, I've told one of my patients that came in and was quoting some news stations. I said, this is the first time since I've known you for 15 years that you're taking your medical advice from the news. I said, now and always, if you have a medical question, if you have a question on plumbing, you go to your plumber. If you have a question on your car, you go to your automobile mechanic. And if you have a question on your medical health, you should take it to your doctor. And your doctor is not going to steer you wrong. If you're going on the internet, there are great sites. Johns Hopkins has a great site for the anything related to the COVID vaccine or COVID virus infection, the Ohio Department of Health. But I think if you Google COVID, then be careful of what you get. So the information you get by going to the right sites, but I would encourage everyone to have that discussion with their own family doctor.
All right. Any other wrap-up questions, or is that it?
That's all I've got.
Well, I want to thank all of our doctors and everyone who participated this week. I got a call a week ago today, as a matter of fact, and it was about 9 or 10 o'clock at night when I got back to the individual, and they said, we are picking leaders from every state in the union, asking them to hold these day of service events. Would you host for the state of Ohio? And I said, it would be our honor to do that. But then I got on the phone the next morning, and I talked with Jenny, our missions director. She got on the phone, and we started calling and putting this together. To put something like this together in less than a week speaks to the generosity of our panel, that they all said yes, that they're willing to spend their time and their effort, 2 hours out of their day after working very, very hard the rest of the day, to be here. And so I appreciate each and every one of you being here. Thank you for lending your intelligence, your spirit, your faithfulness to our community and to the country. We appreciate it very, very much. And I appreciate President-elect Biden and his team for hosting this event, for asking us to do it. This is not a political event. It's not in any way endorsing candidates, but it is responding to a request. And I certainly appreciate the fact that they asked us and that we were able to do so. So I have been teaching a class starting last Wednesday night, called God's Way to Good Health. It's based on a book that I wrote a few years ago. The reason I mention it tonight is because it was published by the Martin Luther King Jr. Press in New York. And so this is Martin Luther King Jr. Day. If you would like to be a part of that class, it's free. It's on Wednesday nights at 6:30 at Epworth.com/live. You can tune in as a part of our online audience, virtual audience. I brought a book for each of our panelists as a gift to say thank you for being here. But let me go to just each panelist. I want to introduce you one last time so the audience remembers your name and where you are. And if you could just give a couple of wrap-up comments, and then I'll say a few things at the very end. But first, let me thank Dr. Prak Niak from the Perrysburg Independent Community Pharmacy, the drugstore. Thank you, Dr. Niak, for your work and for being here tonight. Any closing comments you might have for us?
Well, thank you guys for coming, because it shows that there's individuals in the community that are interested in how they can participate in changing the course of what's going on with the pandemic. And I think that all of us being aware and considering our fellow humans will go a long way of understanding why the vaccination and drive is so important, and that we should all realize that we're actually being part of something great and something that is monumental, that maybe our grandkids will read one day on the internet, probably, and not in textbooks. And so I don't underestimate your impact in what we're doing for the world. And I think it's really important that you're asking the right questions, and always, always, always ask questions to your physician, to your pharmacist, etc., to get your health information, because I think we're all here for your best interests. So.
Thank you very, very much, Dr. Niak. Dr. Catherine Kerrigan, who is a partner at Perrysburg Family Physicians. Dr. Kerrigan, thank you for being here and for what you do. Mm-hmm. Would you share some comments with us?
Well, I'd like to end by saying that I am really very skeptical of vaccines in general, believe it or not. But doesn't mean that I don't like them. It just means that I need to understand them and understand the mechanisms and things like that. And I was skeptical of this. I remember reading an article like 3 years ago about messenger RNA vaccines being the next new thing in shingles prevention, you know, it's like to replace the shot we have now. And I thought, ooh, I'm going to have to look into that one, because I don't know if I want some messenger RNA, you know. And so when faced with the decision whether to get this or not, or whether to recommend it to people or not, I think I did my due diligence, and, you know, it resulted in me getting the vaccine, because now I feel that I understand it well enough, and I understand not only the mechanism of the vaccine, and they understand the gravity of the situation. And I feel like by doing that, then I can, with confidence, you know, instruct my my patients. So for those of you out there that are thinking, you know, are these people really walking the walk? I mean, I can say for myself personally that, you know, it wasn't like a carte blanche, you know, okay, I'm doing the pop science thing, the, you know, mainstream medicine thing here by doing this vaccine. I really looked into it and thought about it. And so I hope that lends some credibility, legitimacy to, you know, what we've talked about here for me tonight. And I think that it really is the right thing to do.
Thank you very much, Dr. Kerrigan. Thank you for your also input about what it was like to get the shot and what the experience was, etc. Dr. Tim Kasnick is a hematologist, a medical oncologist at the Toledo Clinic Cancer Centers. Dr. Kasnick, thank you so much for being here and for what you do every day. Any closing comments you might have for us?
Well, first, I think I speak for all of us for thank you for inviting us, because it's a really nice opportunity to be able to share what we know
thank
with
so
the public.
So a
couple of things. One, there may be somebody out there, but I know all of my partners, and all the physicians I know could not wait to get the vaccine. I mean, we all felt much better once we got the first shot in our arm, just knowing it's going to help the future of our lives and the lives around us. The other thing is, I think we all have to pay attention to our mental health during this period of time. I think, you know, bundling up and getting outside and walking is really helpful. And remember that in a couple months, we're going to be outside again. And it's so much easier in the spring and the summer. We're going to be able to sit outside, meet with our families. And so we just got to get through these couple of months. So just encourage to keep masking, keep social distance, and encourage everyone you know to get vaccines. And things will be better in the future.
Amen. Well, thank you, Dr. Kasnick, and thank you for your nice comments as well. Dr. Stephen Baisley, I said, how do you want me to introduce you, sir? Because I'm aware he was former chief of staff at St. Luke's Hospital. He said, don't say all that. Just say, I'm a family physician. But thank you, Dr. Baisley, for what you do every day, for your support, and for being here tonight. Thank you. Any closing comments?
As Tim said, thank you for having this. We all feel very strongly this is very, very important. Really do.
Thank you.
The pharmacists have stepped up big time in this whole process. And truly, they're the ones that gave those four shots to my younger partner, so maybe that's why they have funny, who knows. But bottom line is the pharmacists have done a wonderful job. And truthfully, the warriors are the nurses, the respiratory therapists, and the cleaning people, and all those people in the hospitals, because it's there. They're putting themselves at risk every day. And likewise, the first responders, the ambulance, all those people. But truthfully, they're the people that are fighting this war. You're getting the vaccine to make their lives easier. You talk about stress. They have stress because in the larger hospitals, there's people dying every day with this. And so we can't mess around with it. Fortunately, we're lucky. We didn't talk about it before. The disease is not so bad in children, and that's why the schools have been able to come back to a large extent. So thank you for that. That's good. Plus, we don't have a vaccine to give them yet. That's awesome. But still, that's so good. In the world that we are around, the media and all that sort of, you know, influences out there, anecdotal evidence. Well, I got a shot, and my left leg turned purple 3 days later. Oh, that's hard science. No. We spent a few hours a few years ago studying all kinds of informational studies because there's scientific process here. So please, as I read somewhere, there was a theory that Bill Gates, we all know Bill Gates, is microchipping the vaccines so they can be activated by 5G. Can you imagine? So please, use the instrument between your ears and process this. We all know common sense is not common. Yes, if you really don't want to do something, you can find a theory, you can find a pundit, you can find an article to substantiate it. But again, this kills people. It's very, very important. And as Kathy said, it's preventable. Let's use the thing between our ears and try to prevent it as best we can.
Thank you very, very much. You know what stands out to me tonight? We know that each of these individuals are extremely intelligent. They know science. They know medicine, etc. I had no idea doctors were so articulate. Each of these people could give a sermon on Sunday just as good as I do. You're fantastic. Thank you so much for also being very articulate. We appreciate that. Let's give a
thank you for having us.
Remember this handout that Dr. Baisley brought? It's the Ohio's vaccination program. If you would like to have one of these, just email us info@Epworth, EPWORTH.com, info@Epworth.com. We will get this right back out to you. If you don't have email, you'd like us to send it in the mail, just let us know. We'll be happy to send that to you in the regular mail as well. I want to take a moment to thank Epworth United Methodist Church, the congregation, the staff. Jenny, thank you. Kyle and Pet, thank you. Peter was here earlier. Les, Dave, our ushers, our greeters, everybody who worked so diligently over this last 6.5 days or so to put this together. It was really a great effort, and it showed teamwork at its best. So how about a thank you to all of our friends at Epworth United Methodist Church. Thank you. Remember that you can tune in to this broadcast, even though aired on YouTube and Facebook and at Epworth.com/live. It will be archived at Epworth.com/sermons. You don't have to remember that. You just click on Epworth.com, and you, where it says sermons, click on it. You'll be able to see this archived. You'll be very easily able to click, text it, email it, share it to your Facebook page or to email it to a friend, share it with loved ones. Get this information out there because it's real, it's authentic, it's faithful, and it just shows a desire to help the community. And so we hope that you will share this in the days ahead and help many, many more people. Our prayer is that God will surround you and bless you wherever you are tonight, that you and your loved ones will be cared for, healthy, and blessed for many, many years to come. If we can help you here, don't hesitate to let us know through our website, phone, stop by during office hours. We do wear masks. We are socially distanced, but we're still open and ready to serve you, and we hope that you'll come and let us do just that. On behalf of all of our team, thank you so much. May God bless you. Thank you for tuning in, and good night.